Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And now,
check this out.
It's Crunch Time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire thrower. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
Yo, welcome you to a Tuesday in March, championship week. Things getting a little closer. We've got another invite to the big dance earned last night. We'll have another couple tonight. By the way, the Gonzaga BYU showdown in the West Coast Conference, well, that's not going to happen. BYU didn't hold up their end of the deal. Gonzaga was in the final minute of a two-point game last night. So you got that going for you, which is nice. A lot of the news today, as you may have anticipated, is surrounding the coronavirus. The Ivy League has canceled their postseason tournament. Now, they were the last on board. They only started having it. It used to be just the regular season champ 3 years ago. But a lot of the news is, okay, we're still going ahead with fill in the blank. And I think you're going to be seeing that in like 72-hour pockets, because with something like this, from what I've read and I heard a medical expert say, don't always be focused on where you're at today. Watch where you are tomorrow, 72 hours, a week from now, and what the numbers say. And it's kind of scary. I was reading the Register Guard today, and in the third page of the sports section, talking about the National Player of the Year, as opposed to a year ago when, you know, Ion Zion was kind of the runaway pick. And now, whether it's Devin Dotson of Kansas, Miles Powell of Seton Hall, Peyton Pritchard is on the short list, Marcus Howard, who a few weeks ago I thought was kind of in cruise control because he's just such an elite scorer, but they have been... You got Luke Garza, the big fella from Iowa, and Obi Toppin of Dayton, who I guess you could say his edge is, do you look at it as an MVP? He is obviously on a team that is ranked through the roof, their highest ranking since like the 1950s. That would give obviously Dotson in there. So, and by the way, the best performance that Dotson put on this year for Kansas was 31 points against Dayton in that Maui tournament. So you got that going for you there. And Peyton won one of those district awards. That's like almost comes down to, you feel like you're voting. There's district 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, who decided the guidelines? How many voting districts are there? And you look at, it's all made up by states.
What kind of gerrymandering
gerrymandering.
Gerrymandering. What kind of
that
gerrymandering
right.
is going on
to
here?
Get Pritchard the District 8 Player of the Year?
Yeah, are we drawing in lines with pencil over
was this
each
North
other
Carolina?
Or something like that? I'm not really sure I'm buying into any of this. Who is my local representative I need to be paying
in
attention
District 8?
To? Yeah, come on.
Well, it depends. Where do you live? I don't think
also
they,
where Peyton Pritchard lives, so I think that answers that.
I don't
question.
Think they redistrict it based on the city where the college is located. I think it's state by state. And then I love how people panic. MGM, where the tournament's going to be held, they're closing the buffets on March 15th. It's like, well, if it's bad,
come on, no!
Could you do us all a favor and close it now? That seems more preventative than anticipating in 5 days. That was like the weirdest story I heard.
That's such a good point. Like, they're not going to get cleaner between now and then. Right. There's just going to be more people showing up. Like, if the buffet is dirty and gross, the buffet is dirty and gross.
Well, if you're concerned that by people putting their hands in it and servers, is that going to get better as more people get infected between now and like Saturday or whenever the hell the 15th is, I guess Sunday?
Imagine being the last person in line and you're like, oh, finally, I'm going to be the last person to get food out of a Vegas buffet. No, I missed the cutoff by a minute. I'm not going to make it.
We had to stay for that last musical act at the show we were at. I got stiffed, and it was probably the guy who got the buffet free comped with his room. So now I got to go downstairs. I got to go to the stupid coffee house, pay $17.95 for a burger. It stinks. I hate this place.
Vegas is dumb.
Vegas, baby. So, yeah, what else is going on? Nothing. All right, we're out of here. Cool. So, one of the funniest things I saw on Twitter today is from Kyle Goon, who was for a couple of years the beat writer covering Utah sports when they first joined the conference. We had him on a couple times, did a great job covering their football and men's basketball program. And he moved on to the OC Register down in SoCal to cover the Los Angeles Lakers. So he it's actually now they call it part of the Southern California News Group. I think that's their online presence. So he writes about LeBron. The comment regarding, if there's no fans, I don't want to play. And then, you know, once more information was gathered, James today, I guess you would say he walked it back a bit because, you know, the virus has taken further root. Others are working to determine the best and safest course moving forward. And again, Kyle Goon is the Los Angeles Laker beat writer. He gets an email from a Clippers fan who says, "So the big mouth who said he would not play without fans is highlighted in your paper. Why all the favoritism?" And he says, "I'm angry with the hype you provide, and the Clippers will get even and not flaunt themselves the way your James does." So the guy is chastising the writer, who writes for an LA paper, is paid to cover the Lakers for talking about LeBron James. Have we hit a dummy load that we may have never seen? And I love with Kyle replies, posts the email, and retweets it with the commentary, "So this person doesn't want me to write about LeBron James?" Social media, for all its entertainment and information, it does take us down a notch occasionally, civilization-wise.
Yesterday, you were railing on Clippers fans that when they, like that one guy who said there's a new sheriff in town when they got Kawhi. Right. And
so have they become idiots?
Well, I was generally just like, okay, like let's, you know, not use a whole bunch of history to just predetermine another team's future. They do have some good players. They're playing a lot better than they have ever before. But now, because of the email, the arrogance of Clipper fans has gone too far. This is too
much. How'd they get any?
Well, that's the thing, is exactly, like, where did it come from? I'm now starting to see it from your point of view. I hadn't before, but now I'm starting to. This has gone too far. When you're yelling at a Lakers reporter for writing about LeBron James, of all people, as a Clipper fan, you can't do that. Come on. You just know who you're writing to if you're going to be an angry person writing an email like that.
Well, the thing that cracks me up is, so what was unwritten there is that clearly, Kyle had a meeting with his editor, and people are like, "Listen, we want you to cover the Lakers, but ignore LeBron, because nobody has any interest in what he's saying or doing." Imagine the look on his face. I mean, if that could have been a real good punked moment right there.
There would be just so many more Alex Caruso pieces all over the internet because I can't ask LeBron about anything LeBron would do or say. It's just Anthony Davis, a little bit of JaVale McGee thrown in there.
Even though he doesn't play anymore, ask him about Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, maybe you write a really nice piece about DeMarcus Cousins and how does he feel being exploited from the Lakers because of his injuries? Does he feel like he was let down by the franchise? I mean, there are things you could write about without LeBron James on the Lakers, but my goodness, after 2 weeks, they would all be exhausted.
It kind of reminds me, we had a guy who's a great guy who called last week, and I think he's from Tucson, was living here, is moving back to Arizona. And he says, you know, I'm not an Oregon fan. You guys talk a little too much about the Ducks for my taste. And I said to him, you mean in Eugene on a sports talk radio show? You didn't suspect there would be a lot of Duck talk? And even he admitted it. But it'd be like 10 years ago if somebody got a hold of the beat writer for the New York Daily News who covered the Yankees all the time. You're talking about the Yankees in games. You're talking about Jeter. You're talking about Rivera. How come you don't talk about the Trenton team that's the double A? I mean, it's like the time you take to contact a member of the media who's – and you click, I would assume sometimes, especially on Twitter, you click on their profile, and with him it says – there's a picture, but words covering the Los Angeles Lakers for the OC Register, and you know he puts the website and the what did I say it was, the Southern California News Group, and it's like I am outraged that he is covering this team, and of course in the comments people are talking about you know the changing of the guard and something like that, and it's like Clippers fans, be excited, be happy. There's got to be something in the Earth Constitution where if you've never won a second series in any of the major sports where it matters, NBA, NHL, MLB, you can't talk crap about a franchise that basically, for the better part of the history of the NBA, they wouldn't even have held the NBA Finals if the Lakers weren't involved. I mean, there was a point where they were in almost half of them. I think once you got to Shaq and Kobe and 2002, if you date all the way back to like George Mikan through the 70s and of course with Magic and their run in the 80s where it was so disproportionate, where I think, did Magic miss two NBA Finals? Something silly like that. And again, a Celtics fan, a recent Warriors fan, maybe Spurs fan, a Clippers fan.
Did you read the last sentence where the guy wrote in the email, don't even want to read the sports section any longer because of one article about LeBron James? Like, really, like, this is how mad you are at the cut. You're really going to be that guy who writes an email to a guy who covers not the team you're covering, and you're mad about the coverage that's going on with as high profile of a person as LeBron James is in society, that literally one email pushed you nearly to the brink of not reading a newspaper. Like, he might be the last guy to still be getting newspaper subscriptions in the LA area, and just he's going to be the last subscriber. He's holding on hope, but no, one LeBron email pushed him over, or article pushed him over the top.
So basically, he's an idiot. I got that the guy was also a little bit younger. I didn't sense curmudgeon over moron. So,
the last sentence, don't even want to read the sports section any longer. That's a curmudgeon. That guy's grumpy. Like, I'm reading, he starts Kyle with a period, not a comma. He's not writing a formal letter here. He is upset.
By the way, notice one thing. He didn't even spell his own team's name with a capital.
Oh, the capitalization was another thing I was interested in. Because he says the Daily Breeze, and he capitalizes the D and B in Daily Breeze. But when he says just the breeze, all lowercase. A very interesting kind of person that capitalizes certain things, and then there's the weird... the other one, I am disgusted with the hype you give to
hype.
This glorified loudmouth / show off James. That's a guy who can't make up his own mind. If you want to get really in there with some punches, get a couple quick jabs in, you go glorified, comma, loudmouth, comma, show off. LeBron James. You really hammer it home that you don't want to pick a couple of these adjectives and attach them to LeBron. You want all of them.
I want it all now. So, yeah, Magic came into the league for the 80 finals, and he missed it twice. So he played 11 years, and they got run in the West semis in 90. And then his second year, they got beat by Moses Malone in Houston. Otherwise, they were in the finals. You know, they won it five times. They lost it in 83 to Fofo and Faw Philly. They lost to the Celtics. Then they lost to the Pistons. And then they lost to the Bulls when Michael won his first one. And because for them, they had a big drought from 72 and 73. They went to the finals and won it. They beat the Knicks and they lost to the Knicks. Then they went through the drought. But, you know, in the 60s, it was insane. They were lost in the finals in 70, 69, 68, 66, 65, 63, 62. In Minneapolis, they lost the finals. They won three finals. They won actually five finals. So, yeah, they've got the 16 championships. They've been to the finals like every second and a half year. And there's a Clippers fan calling them overhyped. Wow. And by the way, I've seen a lot of guys on ESPN and CBS Sports Radio who for some reason keep saying, in a playoff series, they like the Clippers over the Lakers, and they keep talking about Kawhi as a closer and Paul George as a closer. What has Paul George ever really closed out? A series against Dallas?
He helped Damian Lillard take a, quote, bad shot that closed out a series. He did that. I think it's more just you watch what Kawhi did to Embiid in the Sixers and then Giannis in the Bucks with the Raptors last year with, I'm not the biggest NBA expert, with maybe comparable talents that he has on the Clipper. Maybe Paul George is a bit of an upgrade over like a Kyle Lowry kind of player or something like that, where maybe you're thinking if Kawhi is going to load management his way through the regular season and turn it on for the playoffs, and you get Paul George as a second option with a really good they're going to be a tough out. And they met, and I think, I mean, Western Conference Finals, if it's 1-2 Lakers Clippers, like that's going to be an incredible amount of fun.
I guess twice he took Indy to the conference finals, and both times they lost, but he's never even played in a final. And I know if you're comparing 1-2 punches, obviously you've got a guy like Anthony Davis, who pretty much doesn't know what it's like to be in the playoffs.
Has he played in a playoff game? Has he gotten close?
Yeah, they
to
got
the
swept by Golden State.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I know that. I'm not sure if that was the only time he was. Oh, no. In 2015, they got swept by Golden State. And then 2 years ago against the Pellies, got into the. Oh, that's when they swept the Blazers. And then they got crushed by Golden State. So he's played in three playoff series. So I'm not calling him a closer. And it's interesting, if it gets to the conference finals between the Lakers and the Clippers, one of those guys is going to get into a final and have a chance to make history. Because right now, I think it's only Magic. Not Magic, Kareem, who won the MVP of the finals, winning with the Bucks, then a couple times with the Lakers, never got in with a third team. Then you'd have LeBron, who won a Finals MVP with two franchises, and Kawhi, who won a Finals MVP with two franchises. Could you imagine being the centerpiece and winning an MVP with a third franchise? I mean, I don't think that's never happened in any sport. I mean, you had Schilling pitch the Phillies to the World Series in 93, then win it with the Bo Sox in 04, and I guess 07, and Arizona in 01. Reggie won a series MVP with two teams, but a third team, I think that would be the difference maker. Now, there have been players who have won. Robert Horry won with three teams, but, you know, he wasn't even a start.
I was going to say, it's hard enough to think of guys that currently have won three titles, like, especially in the NBA, where it's just kind of been like monopolized by various dynasties and mini dynasties. And just like you get the same three teams rotating over like a 6 year period where everybody like they OK, well, your turn next time. And then, we'll get you. It doesn't happen in the NHL. Like, guys don't bounce around to different teams. Like, when you win a cup with somebody and you're good enough to be an MVP, they're generally keeping you around for as long as they can, trying to make you do that for forever. And baseball players, I would think in baseball, maybe that's the case, but because of the randomness of MVP winners. But I think because it's so random, you then have to be especially good to keep winning MVPs, but to do that, you're going to be a good enough player that you get locked down for a long time.
I had a guy in my head, and I turned out I was right. There's one guy who was a starter for three different Super Bowl winners. Matt Millen for the 80 and 83 Raiders, for the 89 Niners, and for the 91 Washington team. That's pretty special. Haley, I think, just did it for Dallas and San Francisco. Dion for Dallas and San Francisco. Like I said, you could scan and make runs through. Justice, I think, was the MVP of the 95 series when Atlanta won their only one, and he was an important member of one of the Yankees teams in the late 90s. He might have been on a Cleveland team that got in but didn't win. But like I said, as far as being the clear best player on a team that won three championships and be the MVP, no, we're getting into uncharted territory here. All right, before we take our first break, KJZ 95.3 The Score has a great way for you to save big money. Why pay full price when you could pay half? Go to 95.3thescore.com, click on the sweet deals link, save half price on local area businesses. And today, Tuesday, Teriyaki Madness. You can get the details on the sweet deal link. Go to our website, 95.3thescore.com. Check out sweet deals today from KJZ 95.3 The Score. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do just that, and when we come back, Nick will have a Coors Light update, and we'll get into some college hoops next. 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
To me, Baylor, though, still has a strong body of work. And the thing with Dayton, that championship game, if they're in it, is late Sunday afternoon, not always factored in. Right up against selections, Dayton would have to lose earlier in the A-10 tournament for us to even have the conversation. The team people are going to talk about, Florida State. It's been 7 years since the ACC has not had a number one seed.
Interesting. It's Joe Lunardi. When Lunardi and Jerry Palm appear on the shows leading up to Selection Sunday, should they be in lab coats? I think that would be a really interesting touch. And we break away now to Professor Joe Lunardi, who brings you bracketology on this third day before Selection Sunday.
See, I think the lab coats is a great first option. I think a good number two would be They just look completely just frazzled.
Oh,
they've just got messed up hair. They put extra
his
makeup.
His tie is like down a little bit. Oh, he's maybe off a collar.
His tie is wrapped around his head like he's been at a party of some kind.
Or is he covering an election all night?
Right, exactly. He's exhausted. He's maybe debatably wearing a shirt. If it is a t-shirt, or he's just wearing like a t-shirt that's definitely been slept in for multiple nights in a row. And they put some extra makeup on them to make it look like they haven't been sleeping. Like, these guys actually need to look like they've
frazzled.
Been locked away in a basement for the last month trying to figure this out, and then just pulled out with a hook and just right in front of a national TV audience.
Or they're trying to cut to him and he's just waiting, and you see him just clicking away, and there's like a beaker full of something burning in the back.
You don't know why. He doesn't need beakers burning, but he has
There's a Bunsen burner there.
Absolutely.
Oh,
he's
man.
Got one of those ones that's got the, it's like a Bunsen burner that goes into like the little spirally top that goes into something else. I'm not sure what those are for, but he's got one. He doesn't know why either.
By the way, I was listening to the update and a lot of people talking about relocating venues or playing in empty stadiums. Is it going to be embarrassing for a college team or a pro team who... somebody's reporting, they're at their game, and it's like, so have you limited attendance because of the coronavirus? No, nobody shut up. We suck. No, nobody wants to see this garbage. The stadium's just coincidentally empty, or the arena's just coincidentally empty. We have no excuse. We're one and. We're boring. Our offense stinks. We can't stop anybody. So people decided, you know, I lost 22% of my 401k. I'm not spending any more money on this crap anymore. That's mean. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So speaking of mean, as we welcome you back to Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score. One of the Yankee beat writers tweets out, per Aaron Boone, James Paxton is scheduled to play catch tomorrow, and I can't resist, so I have to retweet it with, woohoo, our grandson is scheduled to play kickball, and our granddaughter is slated for a round of peekaboo. That is so the Yankees this year. So Severino is going to be shut down. Paxton, that's 40% of their rotation. Then we had Stanton, which, no way, Giancarlo Stanton got hurt. Tell me more. This is stuff I've never heard before. Then Judge, just now feeling the impact of a diving catch he made in September. And like Nick reported, the GOAT, Gary Sanchez, is feeling ill. Take some Tums and get back out there. What the hell's going on?
The Yankee PR team said that they're unsure if they're going to test Gary Sanchez for coronavirus. But can you imagine the absolute panic that would set in if he, God forbid, tested positive for the coronavirus?
Ooh, a player on a team.
A player on a team who, as a catcher, is touching a lot of things with his hands, throwing them to pitchers. Pitchers who are also
face-to-face for meetings.
Yeah, face-to-face, talking to a lot of people in a locker room, surrounded by a lot of people. He was talking with a lot of media members before they enforced this 6-foot space ban and no one in the locker room, like these new things that they did just yesterday. But I'm just thinking, like, he possibly... with all of the throwing of the baseball he does and all of the spitting that goes on a baseball field, and how I don't think pitchers necessarily lick their fingers the way quarterbacks do. But he, man, that would just be the most Yankees thing ever, where it's just like, and Gary Sanchez has been placed on the DL for the next 30 days with coronavirus.
Yeah, he's on the quarantine section of the DL, which you don't see very often. It's kind of
on the
QL, scary.
The quarantine list.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Maybe my favorite line of the day came from Jim Rome this morning. I've never heard him, in essence, talk about being a dog person, but... I guess there was a story about you know, people who just have to bring their dogs everywhere. Now, you're not going to meet a bigger doggy person and a doggy daddy than me. But I was never one to bring them to hang out at the bar, even if it's outdoors. And, you know, that's, you know, to the store and just everywhere. And Rome is telling the story, and only a dog owner would get this. He says it never occurred to him to bring his dog to a bar or the store or anywhere but a W-A-L-K. And he spells it out. And if you've ever been a dog owner and you're engaged and you play, we got to the point with the first dog my wife and I had, Jeter, who we got in 2000, by the time he was one, not only could we not say walk, I couldn't even spell it. If I said double, oh man, he would be up. Couldn't say outside because he was ready to just run through the back door out into the yard because that meant it was time to play. I mean, you just had to start, you know, my wife and I learned to sign so we could safely navigate having our dog. I'll tell you the truth. But when I heard him spell W-A-L-K, I was like, man, that's quality stuff. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know, you mentioned the guy who emailed Kyle Goon and threatening to doesn't even want to read the sports section anymore.
Very grumpy,
which is
man.
Kind yeah. of a giveaway of his age group, I would assume. We get the paper, I get the Sunday paper at home, and I still like to read the comic section. And in there is Dear Abby and People and Today in History. And all you need to know, and this is not a good trend for the newspaper industry, which at this point, if you know, the first who went online are the ones who survived. I mean, we lost a lot. I mean, it was the Denver Post and the Seattle Post Intelligencer. I mean, we're going back now, 10, 12 years. But if you ever read Today in History and then the birthdays, you never read, like, unless it's a super duper star, young actor or actress or singer, it's always today's birthday. Talk show host Ralph Emery is 87. Whoa. Country singer Norm Blake, 82. Whoa. Actor Chuck Norris is 80. Playwright what? David Rabe is 80.
Chuck Norris is 80?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I guess he was a 70s guy in movies, but first he had to establish himself, I think, as a martial arts champ, which would have carried him into his 30s. So, yeah, you know, you get 1975 all of a sudden is 45 years ago, which for people from my generation, it's like, wait, that used to be like 12 years ago. What was the one of the first awful movies? I mean, first of all, if it's a Chuck Norris movie, you know it's awful. But anyway, he hears the silence. He sees the darkness. It's Chuck Norris. And whoa. Although, about 15 years ago, maybe less, when he and Christy Brinkley, I was up late and watched one of those infomercials on the Total Gym. I actually own one of those. They're really cool. And instead of being a weightlifter, it's more for toning for we elder folk. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Oh, I got to follow up with that story we discussed about the drug scheme involving the horse racing industry. But I'll tell you what, the reason I was reading the People section in the Register Guard today is Max von Sydow died. He's 90. I hear his name and I have to hide under the bed. He was the dude that played The Exorcist, the literal Exorcist. And all I do is picture him at the house in the dark with the clouds and the fog and that gosh darn Tubular Bells theme song, which just, it has scarred me for life. So it's like, I know you had a great career, and rest in peace, an actor who obviously touched a lot of people on multiple continents. But, dude, you scare the crap out of me still. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Fred. Fred, how's it going?
Good. Chuck Norris, good guys wear black.
Oh, maybe that was it.
Best movies ever made.
It was what?
Good Guys Wear Black.
And you said it's the what movie ever made?
Best martial arts movie next to Enter the Dragon.
Okay.
Hey, so we're talking again. You think,
oh, no. We have to
we'll
ban
get our
this.
DAF, we'll get our DAF funds back if the can't use our tickets this year?
If what?
If they decided to have spectators at the Duck Games.
So you, wait a minute. You think that you're going to buy your tickets, they're going to decide there are no spectators, and they're not going to give you your money back? I want to, actually, I kind of now hope that happens, just to see how that works out.
I don't like that idea.
Because it's not real. Good Guys Wear Black, 1978. An ex-U.S. Army commando much find the reason why his comrades from his unit are being systematically murdered. All right, Fred, I got you. By the way, on IMDb, it gets 5 out of 10 stars. I don't know that we're willing to call that a great movie.
That part of the... when you just said 5, I was like, oh, 5 out of 5?
No,
that's 10. A really good rating for a movie. Like, I've never heard of this before. It's got a 5 out of 10. I don't think, what does Enter the Dragon have? Is it just running away with
it? I gotta check.
It's gotta be, if it's above 9, that makes it even funnier.
I think this is the one I was mocking, though. A Force of One was... And it was the late 70s, and they used to promote the hell out of this crap. And it was like you would see him, you know, sitting cross-legged on the floor with his arms down. And he could see the darkness. He could hear the silence. And it's just so cheesy. And when undercover police are being mysteriously killed, a professional kickboxer is hired to assist them hunt down the martial artist thought to be responsible.
Way the Dragon with a 7.3. So maybe Fred does know his movies. Maybe he just got him out of order.
But that was Bruce Lee.
Personal preference. I mean, maybe that a was bit too. Having Bruce Lee is definitely worth at least 2 stars for a movie.
Was that like 73, 71?
72, right in the middle. Right in the middle.
I remember when that came out and people were like, you have got to see this movie. This guy is a badass. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to see that. And I never have.
Bruce Lee starred, wrote, and directed that movie. That's incredible. Wow. A martial arts movie that's directed, written, and starring one guy. That's got to be pretty rare. It's already very rare to see the director, writer, actor in a movie. And normally when they do that, it's like, I'll give myself a little minor part. I'll say a couple key lines or something. I want to feel important, like I'm part of the movie, but I want to be the movie. I've got to write and direct this thing too. Be a producer or something. Bruce Lee, hell no. I'm doing my own stunts. I'm going to do some acting. I'm going to write the thing. I'm going to direct the thing, be the producer. He probably edited it. He might have been the guy driving the film around in the big film canisters. The movie theaters are all over the place in the 70s. Why not?
Bruce Lee, why is that name ringing a bell? Oh, the Brad Pitt movie we just saw. I am such a putz. It got nominated for like a million awards. Hollywood Story, was it?
I think a Hollywood Story, it sounds right.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Put it this way, it was a very distinct take Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The Manson family was involved. Bruce Lee had he obviously didn't have a role. Margot Robbie was in there. It was Tarantino, direct, wrote, Leo DiCaprio in it. It was, I don't know what you expect to see, or those of you who saw it, what you expected to see. I can honestly say it wasn't that. I had no idea what to get, but it was pretty gosh darn unique, and Pacino was in it as well.
I'm back to Chuck Norris. I'm, you know, a young person, so I didn't watch a lot of Walker, Texas Ranger or any of these old Western martial art movies or anything like that. So I think of him as the guy at the end of Dodgeball, that he's in this movie for 45 seconds, and he is one of the three judges of the Dodgeball tournament, and all he does is has this big Chuck Norris smile on his face, and he gives a thumbs up, and like he you know, spoiler alert, he gives the movie to Joe's gym. They win the Dodgeball tournament. They average Joe's gym, sorry. They save the gym. Globo Gym goes down. Vince Vaughn's the big winner of the day, and it's all thanks to Chuck Norris and his thumbs up. He has only been in three movies since Dodgeball came out in 2004. He was
Chuck Norris?
Yeah, he was in a Walker.
Because he's a terrible actor.
Well, he was. I just thought he'd be still out there in things. He did a Walker, Texas Ranger TV movie, a minor part in something called The Cutter. He was in The Expendables 2, and then he showed up on the Goldbergs TV show. Like, that's all he's done in the last.
When was he on the Goldbergs?
2015.
Oh, right. Because I've been watching that show since
probably
the
just like a little cameo thing. Yeah, he just kind of showed up randomly.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That's break time, and that means to wrap up a Tuesday, we'll be back next with...
What are you doing?
95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Today, word came out that a school teacher has tested positive in Georgia, that they are shutting down local schools there. This is a very fluid and quickly changing situation, and so we're obviously monitoring what's happening down in Atlanta and with all of the major events that are going to take place in the next days, weeks, and months to come.
Well, if you insist, that is Tisha Thompson. And I will tell you, remember, the big tournaments have not started yet. So if things progress geometrically in a week, I mean, I'm telling you, I don't think it's impossible, depending on what's going on in New Orleans or Atlanta, that one of the Final Fours is going to be sparsely attended. It's not a prediction. It's just like it wouldn't surprise me. And, you know, for the people who lean on that. And, well, first of all, remember, those cities, that's a gamble when you want to host. Well, I guess it usually isn't, because if it's a Super Bowl or Final Four, you know it's going to kaboom your local economy. But that's contingent on, you know, it's selling out and people being willing to go out and into restaurants and into bars and into your local area entertainment centers. But wow. All right, let's get to it. It's Tuesday, time to peek at the Knucklehead Patrol and wonder aloud. Nick, it's what are you doing? You lead off.
To the Pac-12 women's all-tournament team, I ask.
What are you doing?
The Oregon Ducks women's basketball team dominated the Pac-12 regular season this year, and they were rewarded with their big three all being on the team of the year, which is incredibly insane for a sport that features just five players on the floor at a time. The Ducks also ran the Pac-12 tournament, although not in the same dominant fashion up until the championship game when they had three Ducks scoring or 20 or more points. That's not really the problem. The issue here is that the Pac-12 does not get it. Sabrina was named most outstanding player in the tournament. It was well earned with her 19-31 20-point games and near triple-double against Stanford. However, she wasn't in the overall team of the tournament. How does that happen? How does the best player in a tournament not one of the five that make the team of the tournament? What are the rules here? Who's voting for this? I mean, these are all questions I should have looked up to try and figure out, but honestly, it's the Pac-12, and knowing it would have just upset me more. So if there's some rule that the most outstanding player can't be in the team of the tournament, why? You look pretty dumb saying that. And even if that isn't a rule, how did she not make the all-tournament team? Figure it out, as I ask.
What are you doing?
Makes no sense.
How about this one? Members of the NFLPA want to change their vote, I ask.
What are you doing?
So with the union vote on the latest proposal from the owners during this round of collective bargaining, many players have cast their vote, and now some want to change it. Last time I recall, when you get into the booth and click or mail in your ballot, that's kind of it. Or kind of on you to be informed and know your stuff before you vote. And it kind of reminds me, if you remember, the day after the Brexit vote in the UK, data revealed what is Brexit as the most Googled subject. The danger of an ill-informed or apathetic electorate. So like Aaron Rodgers said last week, a lot of guys didn't learn what was at stake, didn't do their homework, and voted. And now you want a do-over? Big boy time, fellas. You had your chance to quote the soup Nazi. Next, as we
ask. What are you doing?
Wait, that's not what he said. No soup for you.
No, he said he was the one. Next!
To the guy that impersonated Tim Lincecum on Twitter, I ask.
What are you doing?
That guy's name is Michael Daly, who way back in May of 2019 decided that Tim Lincecum was the guy to impersonate on Twitter. Mike is a scammer who reportedly used multiple fake Twitter accounts to get himself jerseys and gear, and according to TMZ and police reports, even WWE championship belts. What a life. Also turns out that in this scam, Mike scammed Baltimore Ravens tight end Hayden Hurst out of multiple game-used jerseys that Mike then put up for sale online. Now, this is very bad, and our Cumulus lawyers have told me to please do not do these scams or attempt to do these scams. Thank you. Now, what I don't get here is why Tim Lincecum. He's not a social media guy. I don't even think nationally he'd be that big of a name to a point where people would be excited to give Tim Lincecum their game-used stuff. I know big-time Timmy Jim, but he never really struck me as a guy who would be really into the Baltimore Ravens. Maybe I get using him on Twitter to get Giants fans excited that their beloved son, but a Baltimore Ravens jersey, really? Feel like you should have gone for something better than just a rookie tight end's jersey on a Baltimore team. Again, these scams are bad and illegal and wrong, but let's not exploit the great name of Tim Lincecum for Ravens gear, as I ask.
What are you doing?
Freak.
A freak.
Bay Area balloon head, Barry Bonds, oh, I ask.
Barry. What are you doing?
We may have set a record for a pro athlete desperate for a pity party. When every single solitary problem in your life is self-inflicted, but you want to play the victim because you've been a spoiled, entitled brat your whole life. So now in an interview with The Athletic, Barry the Whiner says, baseball's given him a death sentence. He feels like a ghost in his big empty house. Really? Why is that? Maybe because you've been a selfish bastard, have an empty soul, treated people like crap your whole life, threatened your mistress with ripping her head off, cheated, lied, showed no remorse, became more arrogant and obnoxious, let Greg Anderson spend time in jail rather than let him testify what everybody knew. The BB on those Balco ledgers weren't Betty Boop or Bjorn Borg or Billy Bean, but you. You got your number retired, still revered by the Frisco fans, which is more than you deserve, as we ask.
What are you doing?
To the LA Rams design team, I ask.
What are you doing?
That's the best you got. Just an L and an A and a horn that looks like a C. The same three letters of the team you're moving into a new building with? Not only is this design lazy, it's not good. Letters aren't lining up. Things that should be level are uneven and mismatched. There's overlapping points that shouldn't overlap. It's just kind of boring. The Rams have a good logo. There's a way to merge the old with the new if you tried a little. But teams are just getting lazy and mishmashing things together with their high-end Microsoft Paint. I hope this was a test by someone to prove that this logo sucked and not by somebody who was very proud of their work, hoping to inspire a new generation of Rams fans. Try again, as I ask.
What are you doing?
My third one I could do. It's not great. If we're out of time, we could actually go to break. All right, let's do that. The 4 o'clock hour of sports talk is next. We don't like to get mired in mediocrity. So hang tight. Coming back at you, 95.3 The Score.
You know what really grinds my gears?